Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
All right, welcome in, everybody. It is a Sports Daily on a Monday, and it is a Reaction Monday, and we have a whole lot to react to here on this Monday. The Royals are back in the postseason. Feels like forever. One of three teams ever to lose 100 games and then reach the postseason the next season. And we are glad to have them there. You'll hear all that postseason baseball right here on KFH. So we will have that for you. As we get things going, the Chiefs win, but at what cost? Now, 4-0, it's been, I don't want to call it an ugly 4-0, because it's never ugly when you're 4-0, but man, it's been tough, and it's going to get tougher. We'll get into the latest there with some injury news. We've got K-State on another massive win, and it appears they're, I guess, Tommy, closer to the Arizona game than the BYU game after that performance, and KU continues to struggle. We will continue to cover all of it. We'll get it all for you today on this Monday. Jad Chambers producing this thing, manning that IHOP hotline for you at 869-1240. You can react that way with us here on the show today. You can also leave us your comments on our video streams on YouTube, on X, on Facebook, and of course on 12 News. Connected Plus, all different ways you can get us. You can leave us voice messages through the Odyssey app if you're listening to us that way. It's all here for you. Tommy, good morning. How are you?
Happy Monday. Good to see you. It's been a busy weekend, a lot to react to. Of course, you mentioned the Royals, and so it's kind of, you know, that time of year where you're keeping one eye on baseball, you're keeping one eye on football. So much to get to, so much to dissect today, so looking forward to jumping right in.
Yeah, I mean, I think we start with the Royals as much as the Chiefs are right there with the injuries and everything else that we're looking at on them. It's an interesting feeling because two times now in the last, handful of weeks, they've been on seven-game losing streaks. But, Tommy, it feels like, you know, if Vinny Pasquantino can go, and I tend to think that he will, because I think that's the way this thing has been trending based on his body language and everything we're seeing, the way their bullpen's going right now, the starting pitching is back in a groove, they were able to set their rotation. This looks pretty good. This looks pretty good.
It does, and it's just shocking, you know, how we've kind of changed things up with the Royals from a week ago to now, and that's like this up and down roller coaster type team that loses seven in a row two different times in basically the month of September. And then from there, you look at, okay, they're, by all conventional wisdom, limping their way into the playoffs. And maybe offensively, they are to an extent. Offensively, they're, you know, sort of iffy at this point. But from a pitching perspective, the pitching is pretty solid, both starting pitching and the bullpen. That's all there. If they can hold opponents, and in this case, Baltimore coming up in the wild card series, if they can hold Baltimore's offense down with the pitching that Kansas City can have and that they bring to the table, then you don't really necessarily need a ton of offense game after game. So this is, I remember you saying this. I'm actually going to give you credit because I remember you saying all the way back probably in, May or June, that this is a team, a Royals team that is set up for a three-game series. It's a Royals team that is set up for a playoff push. If you can get your rotation where you want it in entering that series, which they're going to be able to have that rotation set up how they want it for the Baltimore series with Reagans and Lugo and then Waka if necessary, they're in a position where with a small sample size, you know, they can get a lot done.
Yeah, and look, they are built for this because they have two co-aces. And they're I also think that they are equipped to win a longer series if they can get enough offense. But man, a three-game series, when you throw those two pitchers, you like your chances, right? Those guys have both been incredible this year. It's all matchup dependent. We know this about the Major League Baseball postseason. I can't decide if I would have rather seen Houston or Baltimore. The problem with Baltimore is you got to face Corbin Burns in game one. And he has given up, Tommy, he's given up four runs in the month of September over five starts. In 30 innings, he's given up four runs. He's been incredible in September. So you're going to have to bring your A game. I agree with going with Reagans in game one. I think you go power to power, but this is where you like the Royals. Then you like your chances in game two, even if you can't get game one. And then the depth of the rotation starts to play through in a three-game series. We also like that the bullpen's been really good. So at any sign of trouble, Kansas City can go that route if they need to. Now, that is a new development, right? We knew that they had a couple of guys we liked, but everybody's been pretty good lately. I don't trust that completely. I don't trust it as much as I trust the starting pitching. So if I'm Quatraro, I probably don't have a quick trigger. I can tell you that Burns pitched against the Royals twice this year, both games all the way back in April. It was twice over about 2 weeks, and he pitched. He didn't make it to the sixth inning in either of those games. It was, you know, 5 2/3 each time. One game he gave up 3 runs. One game he gave up 2 runs. I mean, if you can get 3 runs off of him in 5 2/3 and you're the Royals, I think you like your chances. But again, that was in April. In September, he has been nails. He's been lights out. He, even in the game that they lost to the Yankees, that critical game, was that on Thursday? He was really good. And then their bullpen blew it. So I don't know. I like it. I do like the Royals' chances. If you're having me, you know, pick a series, I got to put my money where my mouth is. I've liked the Royals' chances in a three-game series. So I like the Royals' chances in a three-game series. I really, really hope Vinny Pasquantino plays and is effective and can get up there and give them what they've desperately needed, really, since he's been gone, Tommy. And that's a bat in the middle of the lineup.
Yeah, I mean, I think that really when everything panned out yesterday the way that it did with Detroit losing, and now that we know that the Tigers are going to go to Houston and take on the Astros, the Royals will go to Baltimore and take on the Orioles. I think that's the best case scenario for Kansas City because, you know, the one thing that Houston can do is they can get hot really quick, especially offensively. I mean, it's a team that for a long time, early in the regular season, didn't really look like they were a playoff team. They didn't really turn things on until probably midway through, maybe a little bit after the midway mark of the regular season. And now they are one of the hottest teams in baseball. They look like vintage Astros over the last decade or so. And that's a team that I'm not necessarily sure that the Royals match up great against. And going back, I mean, I remember when the Royals played the Astros in Houston not that long ago, and it wasn't a great outing for the Royals. It wasn't a great series for them. And so I think that the Orioles give the Royals that opportunity. And this is not taking anything away from Baltimore, but just in the way that they match up, I think it gives the Royals a better opportunity to be able to fully deploy their pitching the way that they want to be able to pick and choose places to use their bullpen in a more aggressive way than I think they would have had to against the Astros. I think that it really, honestly, from a bullpen perspective, if they were to take on Houston, maybe would have been more defensive with their bullpen than what they're going to be able to do, I think, against Baltimore in this series. So I like this matchup a lot for Kansas City. By the way, we talked a lot about the bullpen, how it kind of came out of nowhere. I texted this to you the other day. The final 2 weeks of the regular season, the Royals have the second best bullpen ERA in Major League Baseball. Outside of Carlos Hernandez, the Royals' much maligned bullpen has been lights out in the final couple weeks of the regular season.
But I would ask you this. Do you trust that?
I think I do. I mean, I think I do because it's not like they were the second best bullpen in Major League Baseball back in May or June. They're the second best bullpen in Major League Baseball right now. And so I'm hopeful that carries over into this wild card series.
I am too. Don't get me wrong. And I hope it's great and I hope it's fantastic. But I would tell you this, I as we sit here the day before the series starts, I trust the starting pitching more than I trust the middle of the bullpen. So that's, they've been great lately, and that's a big reason why the Royals are in this postseason. But we saw them for a full year, and I would much rather see Cole Reagans pitching in the sixth inning than Zerpa.
Don't you think that playing the Orioles gives you a better chance of seeing Cole Reagans in the sixth than if you're playing the Astros in Houston?
Both lineups are good. I saw something this morning. The Orioles, what was it? I'm going to misquote this, so forgive me if I'm not exactly right. They have I think, 8 players in that lineup who have had 400 at bats this year, and they all have an OPS plus of over like at 106. Like, they are deep. That's a deep lineup. I don't know which, like, history tells me I'd rather play the Orioles than the Astros, right? The Astros just know how to win postseason games. And I think that's probably the way I lean if you had to have me pick somebody they would play. But the Orioles lineup is deep. It's going to be tough. They're going to have to score some runs. That's why the Vinny thing is big for me. I have this like thing in the back of my head biting at me that Tommy Pham is going to be big in anything the Royals do in the postseason as a table setter for some reason. So I hope that that's true, and I hope that that comes true. But I think it'll be the top 4 hitters if Pasquantino's there that do a vast majority of any damage this postseason. The rest of the guys, just get to Corbin Burnes, drive up that pitch count, get him out of the game. That's your goal in this first game. We'll have much, much more on that. And this season in totality in the second hour, we'll, of course, be able to preview the game tomorrow as well. But we will have much more on Royals baseball coming out. All this baseball talk is right here on your home of the Kansas City Royals, and we can't wait for it. All right, we'll come back. Wyatt Thompson. We'll talk a little K-State football when we return. Wyatt Thompson joins the show. Big win for the Wildcats. Here we go. It's a Reaction Monday. We're coming right back with more on Sports Day. Welcome back in, everybody. We appreciate Prairie Fire Coffee each and every morning here at KFH for providing us some great coffee. And we welcome in Wyatt Thompson now, primed up, caffeinated, ready to go, ready to join the program, voice of the K-State Wildcats. You can hear K-State Athletics right here on KFH each and every week. You did on Saturday, and you heard, well, what becomes, I think, the next most impressive win of the season, because it comes in that game, and it comes against Oklahoma State, who I do think will be there by the end of the year, Wyatt. But, you know, we wondered, I remember the last week at some point we asked the question, is K-State more like the Arizona K-State or more like the BYU K-State? And I think we got our answer on Saturday.
It sure seems so. Good to be on with you guys. Yeah, it was a really good performance. I think at the end of the day, when you play the kind of football game that K-State played, you have to walk away feeling pretty darn good about the way they bounced back and the way they prepared after the loss at BYU. I think BYU has proven, to be honest with you, to be a pretty decent football team, especially on the defensive side. They did have to hold off the Baylor Bears late in Waco, but did so, jumped on them early. I understand now that Baylor had a few guys out with injury, and there were a handful of other guys that didn't play because of disciplinary issues, but still an awfully good win there. But back to K-State, I think at the end of the day, there was major disappointment in the way the game ended at BYU, and they really kind of, I guess, refocused, I guess I'll say. And Coach told me after we got off the air Saturday, I went over to see him for a little bit and congratulated him, and he said that he was so proud of him because they really just went back to work and kind of, as they called it, kind of shut out the outside noise, good and bad.
Wyatt, I kind of feel like the biggest takeaway, at least for me, from the game was after seeing the way that Kansas State against BYU really struggled in the red zone. They were extremely effective in the red zone against Oklahoma State, scoring touchdowns on all 4 of their drives that ended up inside the 20-yard line of Oklahoma State. To me, that's not just a fluky, they didn't do it against BYU, and then they did do it against Oklahoma State. I think it's more of, I mean, clearly that had to have been a focus in the week leading up to the game.
I couldn't agree more with that, to be honest. I just felt like their focus was a lot better in this game on a lot of different things, and that was certainly one of them. I think you guys could probably tell from the opening bell, too, that K-State's approach was going to be a little bit different. I knew going into the game that they were going to be without Braden Lofton and that Garrett Oakley, their number one tight end, is probably not real close to 100%. So what happens? Well, it's next man up mentality to a degree, and we saw Will Anzio from down in Wichita do a really good job and catch that. That wasn't an easy catch on that jump pass, by the way. Go look in the replay from the angle of south looking to north. He had to get up there a pretty good ways to get it. But they also, I guess the other real point here is that they kind of changed a little bit early on what they did. They went 4 and 5 wide, spread Oklahoma State out, and I think that ran into the fact that they could run the ball. And they ran for 300 yards in the game. So it was really a good performance.
It was a good performance from the quarterback. If you look at the biggest difference, it was mistakes not made in this one. You had the early mistake and then a quick bounce back. But that was Avery Johnson at close to his peak, I think. 19 of 31, it's pretty good completion percentage. He had deep plays. He was precise. I think every time we see these analysts on TV see the velocity at which he can throw the ball around the field, they're kind of like shocked live on air. Yeah, at least I can see. They're just like, whoa, that was impressive to the sideline or whatever it is. But here's what I thought was really interesting. Of those 19 completions, 13 of them were to wide receivers. We've sort of been waiting on that a little bit too, Wyatt. Like, when are these receivers and Avery going to connect? Well, this game, they absolutely did.
And I wanted to say to Jaden Jackson after the game and didn't get the chance, welcome to the party, pal. Kind of the old Bruce Willis line. You know, it was so great to see him contribute. K-State needs that because he's always kind of had it in him, right? Athletically and experience and all of that, to have him be a part of it. And we see Jace Brown getting kind of back to where he was after a slow start to what he was at the end of last year, half of the year for sure, if not a little bit more than that. Keegan, I think, has been a little bit more consistent and, knock on wood, a little bit more healthy this time. And, I just think you're right. Going back to what you said about Avery, he was able to put that mistake behind him quicker. And I think his whole approach was different this week. Aggressive. I think the play calling and the team was more aggressive around him, and I think he kind of went with that, and it turned out really, really well. We all know what kind of talent he is. We talk about that all the time, but he's learning so much so fast, I think, and the coaches just rave about how he handles everything. It's not perfect, and he was the first to take the shots of what happened at BYU, but man, it's how you handle it, right? And how you move forward and get better. And I think he got passing grades in that area this time.
You know, I remember a week ago, Wyatt, after the BYU game, talking about how things really snowballed out of control really quickly for Kansas State, and limiting the damage, I think, was probably a major focus going into the game against Oklahoma State. There was a really critical juncture in the game in the second quarter when Oklahoma State took the lead. It was their only lead of the game. And then immediately after Oklahoma State took the lead, Avery threw his only interception of the day. The defense then limited Oklahoma State to just a field goal. And then at that point, the Wildcats were off to the races. So again, it was something that, clearly a week ago, they weren't able to do defensively, limiting the damage and not letting things snowball out of control. They did a much better job defensively of making sure that things really didn't get out of hand.
It's such a great point, and I will try to augment it this way. When you think about the game from this past weekend, when K-State's defense was put in a tough position, they responded in a much better way than they did on the road in Provo. I know it's easier to do that at home when you've got 51,000 rooting for you. I understand that. But it wasn't just a play or two. It was several plays. I was really proud of the defense, and just in terms of the number of guys they continue to play, how those young players continue to grow into their roles to augment some of the people like Brendan Mott and, Austin Moore and Jacob Perry. So I thought Jacob's game was fantastic. Austin Romain really is playing at a very high level as a true sophomore, man. He's just come back so, so well. Just quality effort, man. You get the couple of picks. You force the fumble with their quarterback, and you get on that. They just made a lot of plays.
So I've been, Wyatt Thompson, voice of the Wildcats, joining us. I've been thinking about the defense, and BYU is such an aberration. They just didn't do much offensively on their way to 38 points. They only had 237 yards of offense. So mm-hmm. I don't even know how to look at that game, honestly. But when I look at the two impressive wins this year, Arizona and Oklahoma State, it seems like K-State is wanting to be a certain way defensively. I think maybe, and I know some of this has to do with the offense and running up the score a little bit, but it seems like they want teams to throw on them a lot to create opportunities. Like, I look at that Oklahoma State game, and if Ollie Gordon's going to run the ball 15 times and they're going to make Bowman throw it 50, like, yeah. I think every defensive coordinator in the country would love to see that, right? kind of the same thing against Arizona. Fifita threw it 42 times in that game. I don't know if that's a trend. I don't know if that's what they're wanting to do, but it kind of feels like they're wanting to sell out to stop the run and make teams throw it on them.
It is a really interesting subject, and I'll tell you why I believe that. Because when you look at the game, I really don't pay a whole lot of attention necessarily, a little but not a ton, to the opposition and what they're saying after games and what have you. But this one was a little different. There was a lot more reaction. You know, I think Casey Dunn, their offensive coordinator, took a lot of criticism after the game because Ollie Gordon had 72 yards in the first quarter and not a lot of touches after that. But I don't know if it was as much they went away from him as that they couldn't run very well after that first quarter. K-State adjusted. They were getting
sold
stuffed.
Out to stop
yeah,
the run.
Yeah. And so there you have, you know, 50 throws. And you mentioned how much Arizona rushed the ball. If you watched any of their ball game the other night, they played at Utah and held them to 10 and played very, very well. I said after K-State beat them here that they're really a talented football team, and I continue to believe that. Where are they going to end up in the race? I don't know, but it's been an interesting early part to this league race because I think you are seeing some ups and downs, which you all expect for the most part. But did we really expect Utah to get beat at home after winning in Stillwater? Not me. That's what makes this so much fun, I think.
Yeah, and I think that brings up a really good point, Wyatt. I mean, with apologies to BYU, I mean, knowing the way that Utah has kind of struggled without Cam Rising and, of course, losing at home over the weekend to Arizona. I know Arizona is a solid football team, but even though Kansas State fell to BYU in the conference opener, right now, I'm not sure there's a better team in the conference than Kansas State, just from top to bottom, or at least a more complete team. Of course, we're still early on, but it's wild the way that even through two conference games, this league has just, you know, kind of been a mess.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit, because I think another really, really good topic, and here's why I say that. Here we are, what, 10 minutes into our conversation. We haven't even mentioned DJ Giddens, who is averaging 7.3 yards per carry on the season.
Yeah.
On the season. Yeah. And when you look at K-State defensively, guys, they're giving up 91.8 rushing yards a game. And for the season, they have given up a total of 9 touchdowns in 5 games. That's great work, no matter how you cut it. 100%.
It's wild to think about this offense. Dylan Edwards, by the way, had his 10 touches in the game. I think that's a pretty good number for him. As we look ahead, that Utah loss is handy. K-State will get to play West Virginia. They'll get to play Iowa State. They'll get to play Colorado. Those are 3 of the remaining unbeatens. Of course, they'll need BYU to lose a couple of times and Arizona only to lose 1 time. Mm-hmm. And they'll be in good shape. I do think they're in pretty good shape. This is an interesting part of the schedule for them because you get Colorado, Colorado's better than we thought after 1 week. They're probably closer to what we thought they might be. Mm-hmm. And then that trip to West Virginia, back-to-back road games. They'll be favored in both of these games, but this is one of those tricky little parts of the schedule before the Kansas game. I will say, though, Wyatt, of all the, all the scheduling talk, they're sort of through that part that really frightened us now. You look at the next, I mean, they won't potentially be non-favorites until the final game of the regular season. They'll be favorites in each of the next 6 games they play on this Big 12 schedule.
I'm really anxious to see if we get a game time for Colorado. As you guys know, K-State is in a bye week this week. They play Colorado a week from Saturday in Boulder. And I just wonder out loud here a little bit. We all know that television loves primetime, right, Dion? And I'm just wondering about, will this be a 2:30 ABC game? Will it be a, 6 o'clock or 6:30 Big Fox game? Who knows what it's going to be, right? But I do think K-State could be favored in the game, and I think you're right in maybe if K-State is favored, maybe the next time they won't be is going to Ames. So they do have a very interesting schedule coming up here. I believe that this bye week is coming at a really good time because they are dinged up in a couple of areas. This will give them a chance to really have a couple of days away from it and then hone into what I think is going to be a hard game. If you watch their game at UCF, the scary part is that, yeah, Shador can throw it all over the yard. He was like 28 out of 35, but they also ran for 120 yards. If they do that, they can beat a lot of people, man. So this is a very important stretch. And going to Morgantown is never easy, right? No. Never easy.
And Colorado gets the bye week too this week, by the way.
They yes, both that's
get
correct.
Bye, so you don't get that advantage if you're there. Yeah, that will be an interesting case study. You want quarterbacks to throw it 50 times? Do you want that? Do you want that quarterback to throw it 50 times? I don't know. He's pretty good. Yeah. I love it. I'm with you on the. I bet you this one gets put into a big spotlight. Colorado might even be ranked by then.
You know what? He's completing 70% of his passes, and they have some dynamic guys. I think the perception is it's just him and Travis Hunter, but watching them and studying them, especially in the last day and a half and what have you, I've done a bunch more than just that, but really getting after it, in the last day and a half. They've got some dudes with some experience, not all of it in Boulder with the Buffs, but they've got some guys that can play. And I think they're making some progress defensively, too. I just really am so intrigued by the league right now with all the things that are going on. And you think that you would assume, right, that Rising will be back relatively soon. I mean, he's missed a couple of games.
Hopefully not before they lose two games.
Well, yeah, I'm with you there. But, there are a lot of things that have, I won't say surprised me or maybe shocked me, but surprised me a little bit. Nobody saw this coming with Kansas as an example. Nobody.
No. And they're not as bad as their record probably.
No, they've been in every game. Yeah. It's been decided late for the most part and a pretty big slide for them now. So we'll see how it plays going forward.
All right. Well, enjoy the week off, Wyatt. Hopefully it's nice and calm and cool and collected for you because next week's going to be a big one when we talk again. I think Colorado could get into that top 25 by then, even without playing. Their wins are impressive, but we'll be ready to get people geared up for it next week.
Sounds great, guys. Great talking to you, as always. Appreciate it.
There goes Voice of the Wildcats, Wyatt Thompson. Always good stuff. If you joined us late, missed any of that, you can always go back and listen to it on the Odyssey app. Make sure to do that. All right, Tommy, let's reset a little bit here. We've talked a little Royals. We've talked a little K-State. We'll come back. We'll begin a much longer, I think, conversation on the Kansas City Chiefs and what we saw yesterday, what we'll see moving forward. They have become a fascinating story this year for good reasons and bad. But that's where we go next. Chiefs talk when we return on Sports Daily.
...97.5 and 1240 KFH.
Down by 10. They'll take over at their own 46-yard line, first and 10. Kareem Hunt will take his turn again at running back. In motion is Sky Moore. Moving short to the right is Mahomes. Gunning it long. Coming down the near side. The pass is caught. Touchdown! Kansas City! A long bomb! And the Chiefs finally get there! A 54-yard bomb to Xavier Worthy! Patrick Mahomes, a perfect throw, burning Christian Fulton.
As heard on the Chiefs Radio Network, which you hear, of course, each and every week over on KNSS. That's the great Mitch Holthus on the call as the Chiefs get the win over, another good team, I think, right? Chiefs now 4-0 against four pretty good teams. This time the Chargers with Herbert actually playing. I know they were a little nicked up, but they've been good this year. You feel great about 4-0 anytime you can get it in the NFL, especially when you look across the league at the strange things that happen. But there are the Chiefs now. They get their win. But the term I keep thinking is, at what cost? We're now through 4 weeks of the NFL season. The Chiefs are without Hollywood Brown. The Chiefs are without Rashee Rice. The Chiefs are without Isaiah Pacheco. This is a problem. So we see yesterday the Chiefs react and adjust and do all the things. Patrick Mahomes actually ended with a pretty good game, right? 19 of 29, 245 yards. He had the pick, which was what led to the Rashee Rice injury. But other than that, it was pretty good day for Patrick Mahomes, all things considered. When you look at, you know, the receiver share, though, it's pretty interesting. Justin Watson had two catches. Worthy had three. That's five catches for the receivers. It was a big Kelce day. Noah Gray had some big plays. Kareem Hunt. I don't know what they're going to do. I have no idea what they're going to do. They need to run the ball still. And they did with Kareem Hunt, who got in, Tommy, and looked pretty good. But you take the win. You're 4-0. When you look across the league at all the strange things happening. And again, the Chiefs aren't the only team facing injury right now. By the way, the team they beat yesterday, I think I tweeted this, like, no excuses with Rice out. The Chiefs are still should win this game, right? Because the Chargers have about nine dudes sitting on the sidelines right now that are good players. Just about every team in the NFL does. So as you look at it in one game, that's a game the Chiefs needed to win, and they did, and they figured out a way to do it. You know, on the surface, you feel good about that part of it at 4-0.
Yeah, they're the strangest 4-0 team that I've ever seen, just because of the way in which they've won those games. But I saw somebody mention this on social media after the game and the aftermath of everything, that once you get into January, you don't remember how you won games in the month of September. And I do agree with that to an extent. You know, if you can get into the playoffs, we all know that the Chiefs last year sort of stumbled their way in, you know, because it wasn't a great regular season for them by their standards. And then at that point, it was kind of like resetting the season. They were 0-0 at that point, and they went on that run, and they ultimately won the Super Bowl. So, you know, I think a couple months from now, you probably look back on these four games, not really remembering or really caring all that much the way in which they did win these games, or the struggles that maybe they had, whether it was offensively or, you know, going back to some of the previous games, even defensively, some of the things that they struggled with. So I do think that you have to sort of strip away a lot of the weirdness that we've seen thus far, and just realize they're 4-0, and that's the important thing. But that's easier said than done when you're in the moment and you're watching these games and you're pulling your hair out and you're like, what in the world is going on, especially offensively with this team? I always go back to, and I realized this when I was watching the game yesterday. I remember, and you and I have referenced this before, Mitch Holthus coming on this show during the summer and talking about how he felt like the defense was going to be even better this year than a year ago. And I think both you and I were kind of like, okay, you know, like we'll believe it when we see it, you know, type thing with the people that they lost. They were fantastic yesterday. You know, after the Chargers went up 10-0, that defense locked down, and especially stopping the run, they've been phenomenal at that. Not just yesterday, but all season long. They're sneakily one of the best rush defense teams in the National Football League in limiting top running backs when they played against Kansas City. So that's something that I do think you can hang your hat on for sure. Steve Spagnuolo is probably, actually definitively in my mind, the best defensive coordinator in the National Football League. So there are some things you can hang your hat on, but by and large, yeah, it's been a bizarre start to the year.
So last week we talked for a little while about the Chiefs being comfortable in this brand of football. I think that now I don't think they don't have a choice but to be comfortable in this brand of football. This is going to have to be their brand of football. I've said this, and man, I thought it about 15 times yesterday. This Chiefs team feels like one of those Patriots teams that never seemed like they were great at anything, and they would win all these games and go on to win a Super Bowl, right? Like the early Patriots teams, let's say, that were really good. Like, if you look back at those teams offensively, like, what did they even do well? They were pretty good running teams, right? They didn't really ever have any star receivers. They didn't have Gronkowski or Aaron Hernandez back in those days. Like, they just kind of figured out a way to get through, played really good defense, and had a quarterback who could make plays. And that's how, you know, in a lot of ways, that's how the Chiefs won their Super Bowl last year. Now, Rashee Rice ended up being a star by the end of the year. But I don't know offensively if this team even needs an identity. And quite frankly, I'm not sure they can get one at this point. Maybe by the end of the season, but not right now. But I do think that they are capable, I think, of riding this style out to at least get to the postseason. If it's enough there, I'm not sure. The defense is fantastic. If they play against the run as well as they did yesterday against one of the better running teams in football so far, then the Chiefs are going to be just fine. Because if teams can't run on them, and you free up Jones and Spagnuolo to get after a quarterback a little bit, the Chiefs defensively, they can be really, really, really good. And maybe even as good as they were a year ago, if they stop the run the way they've been stopping the run.
Yeah.
And that will help, because offensively, like, I nothing is going to snap them out of this. They don't have enough dudes. Like, they just don't have enough players.
And look, defensively with the run defense, we're not talking about a small sample size of one game or even two games. We're talking about four games. We're talking about, you know, a quarter of the way through the season. The Chiefs run defense through four games, I mean, they have really shut down the guy for each team that you would consider their feature back: Derrick Henry, Zach Moss, Bijan Robinson, J.K. Dobbins. Those four guys are averaging under 3 yards a carry in those four games.
And they're really good this year, too.
They are really good. I mean, you know, J.K. Dobbins had been averaging, I think I heard this on the broadcast, more yards per carry than any other running back in the NFL entering the game yesterday against Kansas City. They limited him to 32 yards on 14 carries. Bijan Robinson was the same way. Those other guys, of course, Derrick Henry feasted yesterday on Sunday Night Football. So those four guys that have been the lead backs for their respective teams when they've gone up against the Chiefs defensively have shut them down. And that has been absolutely crucial, especially if you go back to the Cincinnati game and remember the whole dialogue about how the Chiefs' tight end defense was really poor in that game. That's not been a strong suit for Kansas City defensively this season, but they've been able to make up for that sort of thing, or, you know, maybe a couple of lapses here and there in the secondary, or maybe even a lack of a pass rush early on in the season by just shutting down the run game. They have forced teams into throwing the ball and really, in a lot of cases, changed the game plan for the opponents. The Chargers entered into that game not only wanting, but really needing to run the ball hardcore because of the injuries that Justin Herbert has had and just the way that the passing game has evolved for LA. And the Chiefs defense said, we're going to make you throw the ball. We're going to make Justin Herbert get uncomfortable in the pocket. We're going to make him have to run around for his life. Really, the only success that the Chargers had offensively were a bunch of misdirection plays. They had to get kind of cute to try to beat Steve Spagnuolo's defense. But other than that, it was kind of a clinic, especially in stopping the run for Kansas City yesterday.
It is honestly... Is it the most impressive thing we've seen in the NFL so far that the Chiefs are 4-0? I think it probably is, because they haven't had three of their top four options offensively in that game. Essentially, they haven't had two of the four for basically the entire season, and here they are. Mahomes is not playing. He's not like shouldering the load and carrying and willing this team to victory. Like, none of that's happening. None of it. And so, okay, like, they're 4-0, and they've played four good teams, four teams that look like they're at least playoff contenders thus far this year, and they're 4-0, and they don't even have anybody offensively anymore. It's wild. It's wild. Real quick, Kareem Hunt looked good. Kareem Hunt looked better than Carson Steele. I say good. He looked better than Carson Steele. He looked good enough.
He looked good. I mean, I'm willing to
stop right
there.
He had some explosion. He had some explosion. You know, 15 carries for 70 yards. You're gonna take that.
Every
you're
day.
Gonna take that. It's because it's over 4 yards a carry, and that's basically what this team needs to do. Carson Steele unfortunately fumbled again. We probably won't see a lot of Carson Steele for a while if Kareem Hunt does look that way. They trust Kareem Hunt. They'll need his receiving chops almost certainly. So That's a positive development to get there. All right, real quick, we have a Chiefs message on the Odyssey app. If you would like to leave us voice messages, you go there. There's a little microphone if you listen to us that way. You punch it, you send us a voicemail, we get it. Jad gets those. We'll take one on the air. Because when we come back, I want to talk about what the Chiefs do potentially on, you know, in the trade market, if anything. But let's hit this Chiefs message from Jason before we go to break.
Hey, guys. I'm really excited and encouraged by the Chiefs' performance. I thought Kareem Hunt running almost 5 yards per carry showed really good lateral movement. He would get to a hole and be able to move left or right on the line of scrimmage to find a more open hole, something that Pacheco tends to struggle at. Additionally, he ran for over half a yard per carry more than expected per the analytics I was reading, which is the first time a Chiefs runner had been positive in that area in quite some time. I think they could fix wide receiver. I'm looking at you, Tennessee, as a good trade candidate, and I hope that they can start to get healthy, but the run game has me really encouraged, and I think if the pass game can come along, they'll be a pretty devastating offensive team. And the defense looked good. Have a great day, guys.
Appreciate that, Jason. I don't think the pass game is going to come along unless they add to it. Kareem Hunt looked good. The thing about Hunt is his explosiveness looked good, Tommy. I don't know if he's still a game-breaking play guy like he used to be, right? Like if he could break him off like he did for so well as a young player for the Chiefs. But his explosion from start to the line of scrimmage was better than I thought it would be. I mean, he was right. He said he's ready. He said he's got it still, and he was right. I mean, it did look good from that point.
Yeah, I think he looked 5 years younger than he did in the game. I mean, he really was able...
better than he has with the Browns.
And,
I agree.
And you know what? I think that some of that you have to chalk up to this sort of is a reunion. I mean, it definitely is a reunion. It's kind of a redemption story for Kareem Hunt. And I'm sure that if you had asked him a year ago, even maybe 6 months ago, if he envisioned himself getting an opportunity to be RB1 for the Kansas City Chiefs again in his career, he probably would say there's no way in hell that would happen. And here we are, and they need him. And so it's a good match. It's a good fit. And I think that he will be the lead back moving forward for Kansas City.
It's been 6 years. 6 years, yeah, since all that. Isn't that crazy? 869-1240, the IHOP hotline is back open for you. We're going to come back. All right, we'll start the next hour with more Chiefs talk. And when we do, we'll look at what can they do now with pass catchers. Can they go find somebody? I think they have to try, but you know, there's all kinds of names out there. We'll get into all of it when we return. Sports Daily, hour number two. It's Albrecht and Caster, Jad Chambers producing. Don't go away. We're coming right back.